You're listening to A Views and Brews, recorded live at the Cactus Cafe in Austin, Texas. Find out how you can join us for a live show at the Cactus at cactuscafe.org.
Good evening, everyone. Well, let's get started. Okay, we'll have a little Camus to simmer us down because I want to start with a quote from Camus. And has anybody read The Stranger? Yeah, or Force? Oh my God, this is the crowd for tonight. So you'll remember this line from the main character in The Stranger. I looked up at the mass of signs and stars in the night sky and laid myself open for the first time to the benign indifference of the world. So what does it mean to acknowledge the indifference of the universe? How do we make sense of tragedy? What symbols, ideologies, or identities do we cling to in times of uncertainty? And who and what are we without those symbols? Here with me to look at all of these questions and much more through the lessons, legacy, and music of Benny Carter, rabbi and jazz historian Neil Blumhoff. Welcome.
Thank you. Yes.
Thanks for being here. And this is a special evening this evening. Can you tell us a little bit about why?
Good evening, everybody. Thank you, Rebecca. Glad that we're all here. I just like us to all go around and introduce ourselves. because I think names are very important, actually. And as we speak about the themes of The Stranger, we speak about Benny Carter, and we speak about those who are seen and unseen, the opportunities that we have to take a moment and slow down and to recognize who and what we are and the communities that we build is very important. So in the last few weeks, obviously, Austin has had its share of soul-searching and fear, and we are dedicating this show to two victims of the Austin bombing, to Anthony Stefan House, of blessed memory, and to Draylen Mason, of blessed memory. Draylen was a young, budding musician, a bassist, and we all have connections in our own way in Austin. It's still a big, small town, and so to them and to their families, we wish, to their memories, we hope that that their memories are told and their stories are told, and that their families continue to find solace in the community itself. We also wish continued recovery to Esperanza Herrera, another victim in the bombing. And also, we were looking forward to having great musicians. In addition, I wanted to hear the voice of Brandon Temple, who is recovering from some illness, and he'll, God willing, be able to join us shortly too. So those who are ill and ailing, we wish good and complete and swift recovery as well. So names and people and places, and as we think of all those in our places too, we think about the, perhaps as you were saying, the indifference of it all, or the absurdity of it all. And I would just want to think about another thought from Camus, since we're there, who was speaking about absurdity too, who said, the only thing that can defeat absurdity is lucidity. So as we perhaps take these moments this evening and explore beautiful music and have important conversations, may we lift up the partnerships that we have together and the abilities that we have to persevere and to persist in faces of, as we all know, the great storm that is outside. And I don't mean weather.
Well, so let's begin with the man we're talking about this evening and his music. Who was Benny Carter? Where was he born? What was his childhood like?
Yeah, great. So are you all familiar with Benny Carter? Some of you, and I would expect most of you wouldn't be. He is considered to be one of the people in jazz who's least known. However, he had perhaps the longest career. He was actually born in 1907 in New York City, and he had a career that spanned until his death in 2003. He was 95 years old, and one of the very few musicians who recorded in 8 decades. So I think it was very important just seeing about, again, uplifting those who are seen and unseen, to talk about Benny Carter a little bit and to hear a little bit about his life. He was actually born in New York City, and he was self-taught by his mom, piano, and And he was influenced a little bit by the Ellington Band. A wonderful trumpet player lived right down the street named Bubber Miley, who was quite a pioneer of jazz. And young Benny Carter wanted to be just like Bubber Miley. So he went out and got a trumpet eventually, played it for a little bit, realized he was not Bubber Miley, and switched to saxophone. And that's really lovely. And he played with many, many groups as a young boy, actually, in his teens. Maybe you've heard of these folks. And I think it's really important to contextualize his life because it's really really a lovely kaleidoscope of vision in the 20th century. Sidney Bechet, Earl Hines, Willie the Lion Smith, Fats Waller, James P. Johnson, Fletcher Henderson, and Duke Ellington. He played with all of them. And he began to make his first recordings in 1928 as a performer, but perhaps we haven't heard of him much because he really did his work as arranging. He was an arranger and a little bit of a composer also. So he made his bones in the early part of his life in New York City, and as I said, really got to connect with many, many wonderful musicians and began to articulate what jazz was like and what music was like in the early American century.
You know, as we were getting ready for the show, I told you there are not a lot of interviews with Benny Carter. There's not a lot of his voice in anything. And even when he is being interviewed, he's very underspoken. He really doesn't talk a lot about himself or his work. So talk about how he was approaching music at the beginning, and what were those relationships with other people? I mean, he made a lot of money in Hollywood. He did his thing, but his ambition was different than other musicians he was working with.
Yeah, I think he was just kind of following his own voice, and his ambition perhaps was something other than trying to find that he was going to be sort of known as the player. In many ways, he's compared to some degree to Charlie Parker. Benny Carter began as a trumpet player, as I mentioned. The first couple of tunes that we're going to do in a few moments will highlight his trumpet playing, and you can imagine he really played in the 1930s, he played trumpet. And then eventually he made it over to alto saxophone at the same time when Charlie Parker was being discovered and began to grow. But really, he moved to Los Angeles. I don't want to get it too ahead, but he moved to Los Angeles in the 40s and essentially stayed there until the 70s, just doing session work, studio work, arranging, got really involved in Hollywood. And even if you've never heard of Benny Carter, maybe you've seen the musical American in Paris. Did you all see that? I'm just asking. You guys didn't know what Grindr was. So, I don't know. So there's a scene with a musician in American in Paris. That's Benny Carter. So he's there, and he really wrote music for Hollywood as well. And that's really kind of behind the scenes kind of person who really made his way and really made a tremendous career until really in the 70s he started performing again. So really from the 40s to the 70s, he was just helping others make music. And it was really interesting. We have some really lovely songs for this evening, but the songs that we were looking for are not really well known that he arranged, and like songs like Blues in My Heart, or A Walking Thing. These are his songs. These are the ones he wrote, but they're really hard to find, and certainly the arrangements as well. So we're channeling and offering his music through well-known standards.
Well, I don't want to make people wait too long for music, so let's hear the first couple tunes.
Well, I do, thank you. And I do want to just mention one more small chapter.
Oh, you want to make people wait?
I make people wait all the time. I've got sermons, and you know, I'm happy to do it. Oh, by the way, happy post-Easter, happy Passover, everybody.
Yes.
I know that's keeping people away, too. That's a thing, Passover crowd.
Is it?
Okay. So one more chapter that I just want to mention is that in the mid-30s, Benny Carter moved to Europe, which, spoiler alert, the 30s are not a great time to move to Europe. So he lived, I'm just saying. Some of you are like, why? No, we'll talk later. He was in Europe from 1935, and to his senses, he came back in 1938, and he was actually arranging, he was on staff arranging for the BBC Dance Orchestra. That's where he was in the 30s. So the first two tunes that we're going to highlight are going to speak about his success initially in New York City, specifically in Harlem. He did a really landmark recording with a British band leader named Spike Hughes, which was a series of recordings that featured prominent African-American musicians that was recorded in 1932, in the early 30s. This song is called Alone Together, and it's a song that was written in 1932 by Arthur Schwartz and Howard Dietz that was in the Broadway hit that you might know, Flying Colors. No, you don't know. I didn't know it either. But I think that Alone Together is just a beginning theme of how many of us live our lives, to go back to the themes of alienation and indifference, that many of us are sort of in the world but might feel a little bit estranged from the world. So Alone Together is a beautiful hit. And he also will do the second tune called Honeysuckle Rose, which is from 1929, written by Fats Waller. And he made a recording of it in the late 30s in 1937, featuring Coleman Hawkins, Django Reinhardt, and we wanted to show you the influence of Bubber Miley on him as well. Again, he's playing trumpet, so asked David Young to demonstrate in the Honeysuckle Rose sort of the use of the mutes and the growling, and you'll hear it. It's called the wah-wah mute, and it's a really beautiful way of being transported back in time. So if we could, we're going to hear Alone Together, which is, again, a statement of existentialism, and Honeysuckle Rose, which is a really lovely tune as well. So if we can welcome our musicians. Great. So we're so thrilled and delighted to have with us on drums Scott Lanningham. On bass, the wonderful Roscoe Beck. On saxophone, Michael Malone. On trumpet, David Young. And so beautiful to have back after a little bit of time, our good friend Red Young on piano. Thank you. That's David Young right there on the trumpet. Imagine growing up with that down the street, like Bubba Marley. We all want to be like Bubba Marley. Michael Malone on saxophone. Beautiful. Red Young on piano. Roscoe Beck on bass. Scott Lanningham on drums.
Just incredible. You coming up? It's going to make me do this alone. Together. You know, I love that tune, and I loved how we started off with that tune, because I think it says a lot about our place in the world. Not only, you know, Benny Carter being out in Hollywood, where, I mean, if there's anywhere you're going to be alone with a lot of people, it's Hollywood.
Sure.
But also, there's this idea that, you know, how do we understand unity and community, and what does that mean? I think when we look back to even The Stranger, this idea of, you know, Marceau being put to death in the name of the French people, and then him questioning, well, what does that mean? You know, what does it mean to be the French people? I think we get this idea that we're a part of a community, but how real is that? And how alone can we feel within that unity? And what does it take for us to feel united? You know, that's a big theme.
And it shouldn't, I think that's true, and it shouldn't have to be tragedy that sort of wakes us up to that reality that we somehow better be doing better somehow, right? That sense of unity is cultivated in moments like this. And to practice that and to be aware of that, I think, is much more healthy than to feel lurching into from one crisis to the next. And as we read names and as we think of people and as we mourn what we're really capable of, the opportunity that we have to realize that we can't necessarily shoot for the moon and think that we're going to come to some Shangri-La here, but to be able to fashion relationships in a way that allows us to just do the best we can and not to have anybody speak for us in that pursuit.
So there's a poet, Arcelise Germay, this is her new book of poetry, The Black Maria. And there was a line that I read that I just, in this kind of sense, I just want you to respond to this little line where she says, and she's an island poet, so there's a lot of kind of island themes in this book, but she says, "But the angels I chart abide by different sight and hover up not as bears or sisters, but a route dense with fires, dark time adorned by the messages of mirrors, saying, you are made of everywhere." Can you talk a little bit about Benny Carter in terms of you are made of everywhere?
And in fact, he was. He went everywhere. And I already sort of listed some of the folks with whom he played when he was younger. After he got back from Europe in 1938, he set up at the Savoy, which was a famous jazz club in Harlem, and he began to do arrangements for others: Benny Goodman, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Lena Horne, Glenn Miller, Gene Krupa, Tommy Dorsey. Sort of that he was everywhere, and the opportunity that he had to have this kaleidoscope of activity and of inspiration and of seeing various things allowed him to move ultimately in 1943 to Los Angeles, where he did work and arranged for Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan, Billy Eckstein, Ray Charles, Louis Armstrong, Lou Rawls, Mel Torme. I mean, this is Benny Carter. He's like the Tiresias of the 20th century. It's like the guy who just sort of was with everybody, sort of just spelling his truth quietly, allowing things to just sort of be. And what he didn't need to take on the headlines of things. He just was able to sort of do his work and perhaps to fulfill the Camus quote, which says that when he wrote, "The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion."
Yes. See, I knew we brought Camus in for a good reason.
Whoa.
That was good. That was really good. Can you just read that one more time?
Sure.
"The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion."
You know, I love that. And especially in terms of when thinking about how he was composing film or composing music for films.
And arranging
music for films. You know,
he started with a film that I'm not such a film, but maybe you remember in 1943, Stormy Weather, American in Paris, and Snows of Kilimanjaro. He arranged the music for those films as many others as well.
But this is also an interesting time for Hollywood when they're celebrating and creating this idea of celebrity, you know, and I think with the idea of celebrity, there's also the myth that it is a singular vault to prominence and power, when you can ignore everything and everyone who bolsters you in those spaces. And I wonder about how we do that today, and how we ignore, we create myths around leadership and celebrity and power, and ignore that it takes everyone to make these things happen. You know, and for him, that, you know, his very existence being a form of rebellion is prominent in the fact that he was creating celebrity at that time.
And he might have been creating celebrity for others and helping others succeed, but he was just sort of motoring along doing his work. And I think it's a very helpful and very powerful or potent lesson for us as we think about, well, how do I make a difference? Where do I lend my time? To which cause do I give my effort? That Benny Carter was just sort of launching people's careers, helping people succeed. And he succeeded himself, of course. But, you know, he's 95 years old. And, you know, the jazz musician that we have in the construction of a musician, or even the construction of masculinity, we have this sort of burning bright star that goes out too early, whether you think of Charlie Parker or you think of James Dean or whatever else. This construction of masculinity is something that I think he defied by his very life.
I also think it is in opposition to the idea of a cultivated or purchased happiness. You know, when he was interviewed at the Smithsonian, he said, well, I'm in it for enjoyment. You know, if it's not fun, why do it? And that idea of him having a really good time for the sake of just having a good time and having fun, and how important that was, and how that in itself is also an act of rebellion.
Right, and I think that's true. And in addition to his day job doing the arranging, you know, we don't necessarily think of Benny Carter. Many of us don't know who he was, but he also was one of the pioneers leading the fights against restrictive covenant housing, which I'll explain what that is in just a second. But he in Los Angeles actually brought a case against folks who wanted to determine to whom their houses were sold, right? We're not going to sell to this group of people, this thing. And that was called restrictive covenants. So he brought legal battles in Los Angeles in 1948 that ultimately were successful, that ultimately reached the Supreme Court, saying, of course, that restrictive covenants were unenforceable. So not only was he doing his work, sort of a musician, adorable, well, great work that he's doing, celebrity, interesting, he was fighting the fight in the trenches, putting literally his mouth where his money was and vice versa, saying that this is not going to stand, and we need to change the world both by active everyday work and by standing up for the injustices that we see.
And I think it's important to note that, you know, he's not recognized or known for that. So a lot of the people fighting the fights, like in Camus' The Plague, you know, it takes the community. It doesn't take the one single hero to fight the plague. It takes everybody coming together to do their part. Right. And I think that's a really important lesson from his life and also from Camus.
I agree. And I think that if we sort of see things, whether it's March for Our Lives, as sort of these ebbs and flows of history that'll soon pass and there'll be another media cycle, I think we miss that very important lesson that ultimately all of us together have to determine what our values are. And it was really, it's very disturbing as we see again in the news of a shooting at YouTube campus in California. There was an article that I saw that said, Americans tolerate mass shootings because we think they're fine. And of course, we're not going to admit that. But what are we willing to do about it? How do we stand up for it? How do we recognize that this isn't just another facet of our society, and that we recognize that this is a baleful aberration that we ultimately have to deal with and uproot? And I think that learning about Benny Carter, learning about the names of the people that we're standing with, we should know their names before it's too late, and we memorialize them as victims, God forbid.
So you wanted to talk about Quincy Jones before we get to the next tune.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think so. When he was in Hollywood, he was 1945. He recorded first with Miles Davis, a very young Miles Davis, and Miles Davis viewed him as a mentor. But he's also, Benny Carter is compared to Quincy Jones. You remember him or you know him? Okay. So Quincy Jones has been nominated for the Grammy 79 times. He has 28 Grammys. And Benny Carter doesn't have that many, but he does have many things, including the NEA, the National Endowment of the Arts Master's Award, the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award, and the National Endowment of the Arts National Medal of Arts, awarded to him in 2000 by President Clinton, as well as a Grammy for a tune that we're going to hear pretty soon called Prelude to a Kiss. So his solo in that tune won a Grammy for himself. But Quincy Jones, if you can read his interviews, he gave a lot of interviews. He gives a lot of interviews. Show that he was really indebted to Benny Carter and just sort of his everywhereness based on your poem. And Quincy Jones really styled a lot of his early career in the 50s and the 60s based on Benny Carter's influence, which I think is really, really interesting. A lot of people are sort of looking at the bright stars in the sky going, oh, you play alto saxophone, Benny Carter, and Charlie Parker plays alto saxophone. Therefore, you guys must be the same. It's like, no, man, that's not. Charlie Parker is amazing. Actually, there's a quote about Charlie Parker. He says, I didn't know Charlie Parker well, but I spent some time with him, and he was articulate and well-spoken with a lot of curiosity about music and the world. But the only way he seems to be depicted is as a junkie. And that's not the full picture. So Benny Carter, I think, influenced many, many others, seen and unseen, as we said. And I think that you're bringing us, as we hear more music in a second, to The Stranger, which was written at this very same time in 1942, is about indifference. And we recognize that the whole theme of alienation and indifference is because his victim, I don't want to spoil it for those who haven't read it yet, but is never named. And the whole idea is to name the people that we're with, and thus we stop being strangers to each other. And I don't want to spoil the end of our thing, but we can become just friends. We don't have to just love each other. Oh, we don't have to love each other, but we can become friends recognizing the commonness of our humanity. Okay. So here's two more tunes. They're to honor his Los Angeles years. It's a tune that was written by George and Ira Gershwin, from the show Girl Crazy, and it was a foundation and remains a foundation for many other popular jazz hits, including Charlie Parker's Anthropology, and it's a song that's symbolic of the swing era. Of course, it's I Got Rhythm. So we're going to play that one, and again, I'm doing that connection because of American in Paris, where Benny Carter is in the movie, and Prelude to a Kiss, which was written by Duke Ellington, Irving Gordon, and Irving Mills, which is very chromatic, actually, and it's not in the Tin Pan Alley style or canon, but rather its melodic lines and harmonies are akin to classical music, and I think that that's really how Carter, if you listen to his arrangements, are very chromatic and very much unlike what we might associate with sort of popular jazz. And again, he won this Grammy in 1984 for his solo. So please enjoy I Got Rhythm, were written in 1930, and Prelude to a Kiss, written in 1938, featuring our wonderful musicians this evening. So as they warm up, I want you to hear an I Got Rhythm. Obviously, I Got Rhythm, but also Michael's going to play a little bit akin to Charlie Parker's stuff of Anthropology. He's going to merge the two styles. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Thank you. Thank you.
First of all, thank you guys. That was incredible. Scott Langingham on drums, my friends. Michael Malone on saxophone. Roscoe Beck on bass. Red Young over here tickling the keys. David Young on trumpet. I think sometimes because this is, these events happen every couple months, you know. We forget that we have some of Austin's finest, and not only Austin's, but the world's finest musicians here with us tonight. So thank you, guys.
So thinking about that, too, we have a great opportunity this Sunday after Passover, this Sunday to hear and to celebrate with Red Young as he is inducted into the Austin Jazz Society Hall of Fame.
Woo!
He's still available for bar mitzvahs and stuff, but he's going to be in the he'll be in the Hall of Fame. So you can still call him. His rates will go up, but he's still doing it. So congratulations, Red, and to all. This is a privilege just to be here and create the community and to say our names and to say the ability that we have just to share these moments together.
Yeah. You know, and Scott and I were talking before the show about just the wonderment that is every day and the everydayness. And I think we forget sometimes, you know, when we focus on the highlights of life, how much it means to do what we do every day. And sometimes when we get caught up in it, we forget how phenomenal it is. And we started off with this tune that was based on anthropology. And it made me think of a professor of mine, Virginia Dominguez, who wrote a great book called Selfhood and Peoplehood in Contemporary Israel. A long time ago, this book was written. But she told me when I started studying anthropology, she said, you know, anthropology isn't about understanding the other. She said, it's about recognizing the other within ourselves and figuring out that we're all distant from one another and how we can all figure out how we're similar in these very unique ways. And so I was thinking a little bit about that and about how we forget that. You know, when we go through our lives every day, we forget how phenomenal it is, but also how connected we are and how we take for granted our separations from other people.
and from ourselves.
Well, I think there's a big difference between having to do something and getting to do something. The fact that we get to do this as opposed to have to do this, I think is really important and will go a long way for hopefully combating that estrangement. That would be my hope.
Yeah. I have a friend who's a poet who said, oh, if I create this great emoji that's a kiss emoji with a mustache, I can retire. And I said, oh my goodness, you'll make enough money with it. You don't have to write poetry anymore. I thought that was really funny. I don't know. You know,
exactly.
A lot of us, you know, like fight for time to write poetry. And he was like, right. Hopefully I'll make enough money that I don't have to do this
actually,
anymore.
Actually, Camus says something very similar, not about emojis.
No?
But he says that nobody realizes that some people expend tremendous energy merely to be normal. So, I hear you.
He knows me.
He gets me.
So, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the latter part of Benny Carter's life. You know, what is the legacy? Why title this Jazz and the Art of Persistence?
Because he was really everywhere. Because there he goes off to Los Angeles and does this great work really for 30 years, from the 40s until the 70s, and then begins to perform again. As I said, he got that wonderful Grammy, that extraordinary solo in Prelude to a Kiss in 1984, so 84 minus 7, so he's upper 70s, 77, is that right? Okay, thanks math geniuses. So, and then, you know, he's sort of doing his thing. But he was invited to Princeton University, and there was a guy who was writing his thesis on jazz, and he sort of was like, well, there's Benny Carter. So one thing leads to another, and he spent like the latter half of his life teaching at colleges, and he was at the universities. He was teaching at Princeton, at Harvard. This is really from the late 60s. All the way through, really through the 90s, where he was really doing these guest lectures. And he was, just so think about it, again, this ubiquitousness of him, the most famous guy we've never heard of, you know? The way that he was able to influence people's lives, both in movies or in music or in the classroom. I think it's really quite amazing what he was able to do and performed all the way through the 90s. So as I think one critic was saying, this is the only guy who, in the 20th century, who was able to be on some of the first jazz recordings and have a website.
Yeah. It's really amazing. I mean, would he be doing TED Talks now if he was still alive? I mean, what would he be doing now?
I'm sure. He'd probably have his own app at this point.
A kiss emoji with a mustache.
That he was Whitney Bailett says that Benny Carter belongs to that select circle of pure jazz musicians who tend to represent the best of their times. So that's a really lovely way. And John Hammond, one of the great discoverers or impresarios of jazz, said that Benny Carter was one of the great influences in American music, one of its unsung heroes, which I think is important to know.
So we want to open things up for a couple questions before our last few tunes. And I think, is Amy still here? Yeah? Yay! So just raise your hand if you have a question, and she'll come to you with a mic. But make sure you are on mic so we can have you on the podcast. And maybe we can have some lights. I can't see anything. But, okay. Gracias, Jack. Yes. Okay. So just raise your hand if you have a question and we'll come to you. Feel free to not ask a question.
Well, we can talk more about existentialism too, which I'd really love to. So again, this idea, unless there's interrupt me, but so the main character in The Stranger is Marceau, right? And indifferent, etc. But again, his victim, he shoots somebody, his victim is never named. And in 3 years, 4 years ago, there was a book that was written called The Marceau Investigation by an author named Kamel Daoud. This was written in 2014, where he actually names the victim, who happens to be Arab, named Musa, and he begins to construct this history of this victim. And it's a really interesting thing that, you know, people were maybe scandalized or surprised, but I think it's really important to name the people in our lives who we remember and whose presence we carry in our hearts a lot. So, you know, in addition, we're naming the victims of the Austin bombings of Anthony Stephon House and Draylen Mason. And I just want to mention somebody, Mirelle Knoll, who was an 85-year-old Holocaust survivor who was murdered in her home last week in Paris because she was Jewish. And the opportunities that we have to remember that this is not something that ends, that this idea of estrangement or alienation is something that is with us, and we have to do something, and as well, as opposed to just, you know, gathering at the end for some memorial service again. We have to begin to anticipate things as they happen before they happen, so we can have a strong community in order to withstand such perversity.
I also think it's important, you know, in The Stranger to recognize the role of the environment in the crime. You know, like the way that Meursault describes the sun on the knife and how that cuts through his head, and how that is, when he is asked at his trial, you know, why did you do what you do? He said, well, it was the sun. I was just hot. And there's so much about the environment that constructs the way that we live our lives. And if we can not only figure out, you know, who are we and how are we going through our world, but also like what is wrong with our environment right now, and how the fact that there was no motive in this crime and no motive in the Austin bombings, you know, what does that mean about the environment in which we live and in which these things are caused by the environment in which we live? So, you know, there are many things that we need to confront in this parallel.
For sure. And, you know, I think that as we regard that, why did we pick this persistence, right? You know, you may remember Leviathan by Thomas Hobbes. Nobody. Great. Awesome. It's an old book. So he writes, he wrote,
they're like, this, we did not sign up for Philosophy 101. They're like,
he wrote,
no.
You maybe remember this quote. He wrote, life is nasty, brutish, and short, right? So what could be worse than that? And perhaps as we look at the 20th and 21st century, the worst alternative is that life is nasty, brutish, and long.
Eternity is really long, especially toward the end, right?
That I think a lot of people really do suffer, and a lot of, whether it's environment or other things, that we just don't see each other. And I think it's really important. And there's, you know, this there's a song that, of course, Benny Carter did, written by W.C. Handy in 1926, that was a riff on his other song called Careless Love. He wrote a song called Loveless Love. And I want to read some of the lyrics because I think it's really important. This is 1926, and I think it describes this condition of alienation. He wrote, love is like a hydrant. It turns off and on. Like some friendships when your money's gone. Love stands in with the loan sharks when your heart's in pawn. If I had some strong wings like an airplane, I would fly away forever and never to come back again. For love, oh love, oh loveless love, has set our hearts from goldless gold, from milkless milk and silkless silk. We are growing used to soulless souls, such grafting times we never saw. That's why we have a pure, full law. In everything we find a flaw. Even love, oh love, oh loveless love.
We are growing used to soulless souls. That's some powerful stuff right there.
It is, right? So, but this is 1926, so we give, like, the white guys, we give them the pass, right? Like, they're going to, like, 1942, like, Camus invents this. Yeah. This is the human condition that was brought out long before that. So I think it's really important to notice that. We're going to end on a happy note, y'all. It's going to be good.
Don't worry.
It's going to be amazing.
Don't worry.
It's going to be great. It's going to be amazing.
Were there any questions? Because we can move on to the last couple tunes. Oh, there is one in the back.
Is everybody leaving?
I was like, I gotta go. It's enough of this, soulless souls.
It's gonna work out at the end.
Just one question. You said that he appears in a movie, American in Paris?
In Snows of Kilimanjaro. And he does the arrangements in American in Paris.
Oh, I thought you said he appeared.
Snows of Kilimanjaro, sorry.
Snows of Kilimanjaro.
I haven't seen it, but that's what I read, that he has a cameo in Snows of Kilimanjaro.
I've got American in Paris. I was hoping to be able to see him.
So, but he may be too. If you know the movie better than I do, so I know he's working with the Gershwins and doing the music too. But I understand. I don't know the movie so well, because that's, you know. But maybe look for him there too.
I guess I'll have to look for one more time.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's not your medium, movies?
Nope.
Sorry.
Well, let's hear a couple more tunes, and then we'll
That's it? That's all we got?
Well, yeah. I mean, unless...
Come on, y'all.
Oh, there is another question. Okay.
Storms
I'm
a brewing.
I shut you down. I'm like, we got to go. We got hail coming in tonight.
Well, I just wondered about his own relationships. Was he estranged, or was he happy in his relationships?
I think he was happy in his relationships. He was married a few times. No judgment there. And he had long-term relationships, I think, that as far as I know, and was really centered and connected to his family. So one more Camus quote. It's a good one.
Is it?
Yep.
There is not love of life without despair about life?
No, that's not the one I had.
Okay, never mind.
Oh, man. He wrote, I draw from the absurd three consequences, my revolt, my liberty, and my passion.
Say that one more time.
Okay. I draw from the absurd three consequences, my revolt, my liberty, and my passion. So knowing what the world is, we got to go out there and fix it. I think that's how I take it. That we're free and that we have passion to go do the thing as opposed to throwing up our hands and say, what can you do? A soulless soul. Do-do-do. Oh, well. We got to go out there and do the thing, even if it is a soulless soul. You read a beautiful selection from a poem earlier about the mirror, right? And we have to engage each other with a mirror. We have to reflect who and what we are. Otherwise, it's a doomed enterprise. And I refuse to believe that that's the case.
Even if we're living within absurdity.
Especially so. So let us find our liberty, what we're willing to rebel against, and find our passion and go out there, even in the storm, to make it work.
Every day.
Every day.
Every day. Okay, what are we going to hear?
So we're going to hear two more tunes. Yay, right? Back to the music. Great. You know, these evenings would be so much better if I just stopped talking, right? Wouldn't that be amazing? So we're going to hear two more songs. One's called Things Ain't What They Used to Be. You know what I'm saying. Written by Mercer Ellington. Mercer Ellington, the son of Duke Ellington. Duke Ellington could not write music in 1942 because he was under obligation with the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, who were on strike. So he could not create art. So somehow Mercer happened to write a song called...
It was Mercer?
His son.
I thought he just made that up. He's like, Mercer?
No, it's his son, and he was a great musician. But so he wrote, Things Ain't What They Used to Be. And then we're going to end with a song from 1931, written by John Klenner, called Just Friends. Isn't that nice? Just Friends. But let me read the lyrics to Just Friends, and then okay. I'll stop talking.
As long as there are no unsold.
No, it's bad.
Okay,
it's
go
bad.
So just friends, lovers no more. Just friends, but not like before. Two friends drifting apart. Two friends, but one broken heart. And that's what we do, everybody. That's the best we can do. What wonderful musicians we have. Yay! We're sharing one broken heart. I don't know about you, but I think that's right. So our friend Scott Lanningham on the drums. Roscoe Beck on bass. Red Young on piano. Michael Malone on saxophone. David Christopher Young on trumpet. So if we started talking about like unicorns and rainbows, that would be better for everybody. Because we got to just acknowledge what is. But this music's going to get us dancing home. Yes, it will. So enjoy. Things ain't what they used to be indeed. And just friends.
breaking so many hearts out there. Michael Malone on saxophone. David Young on trumpet. Hall of Fame's Red Young right here on piano. Roscoe Beck on bass. Scott Langingham on drums. Thank you so much. Thank you, Rabbi and jazz historian Neil Blumoff, who just received a text on his phone that said the thunderstorm warnings in Austin have been canceled.
Oh, yeah.
So we beat it, everyone. Let's make it home safe tonight. Thank you so much for coming out this evening. Enjoy your evening and come back, please, for another Views and Brews. Good night.
Yeah.
Thank you.